What's it like to be a video game reviewer? Part 3. How you doing? Read and narrated by Carrick from ACG. Additional sounds provided by Random Orifices and brought to you by Sniffling Mifflehouse Wifflescorn Books. Copyright 2019. What it's like to be a video game reviewer. Chapter 3. How you doing? The hotel lobby was bustling, an epicenter of people flesh, as developers pressed cell phones together to transmit personal details as they nodded and promised to, you know, get a hold of one another after GDC, but obviously never would. The trio walked through the lobby, out of the ordinary for sure. Not because they didn't have a place there. GDC was a place for journalists, game developers, publishers, and yes, even YouTubers from all around the world. No, it wasn't that. It was the sheer number of prostitutes and escorts that flitted around the room like flies surrounding brand new shit. That was until the giant bearded one looked at the other three as they stepped out of the elevator and said in a plus 20 decibel voice, "I'm pretty sure this entire room would test positive for syphilis right now." So that's really what began one of our major elements and memories of GDC. We ended up getting out of the Vermintide and the Lego events. We go down into, and I believe this was the Hilton. We go down into the Hilton lobby. And I start walking around the Hilton lobby, and there was a large bar there at the time. And as we start to exit, I'm there with Vanza Wild and Cadiz. And I realize, as I look around, that the ratio to hotties and nerds is incredibly high. Stunningly high. Far too high. High to a number to where you would basically assume that something was wrong. And something was wrong at that time. I realized that later on when I talked to one of my friends who, yes, she had been an escort for years, she had reminded me that that's what happens at a lot of these events, is that a lot of people would show up to, you know, sort of see what they could do and get their freak on for a little bit of cash. And I'm not kidding. There was enough hosiery and high heels and makeup to absolutely nail a Euro model runway. It was crazy. So as I walk through here with Vanza Wow and Cadiz, all of us really not end up, I guess you would say, not being big town people. You know, there's a larger town near us, you know, multiple hundreds of thousands, but it's nothing the size of where we were at this time. As we walk out and I'm laughing about the syphilis joke and I'm just thinking this entire room is for sure got a really low grade fever, I walk out and I notice somebody leaning against the wall. Now, people need to remember, I am a big fan of the Unreal series. I'm a big fan of Gears of War. I'm a big fan of a lot of those older shooters, especially as we see their sequels today, more along their older titles. And who's leaning against the wall talking on a cell phone but Cliff Bleszinski, creator of Gears and a person who worked on many of my favorite games, Unreal included. And as we walk out, I nod, and he was nice enough to nod, had no clue who I was, obviously. But I nodded to him, he nodded back, and I realized it was this crazy moment where Cliff's there, nice guy, you know, his little blonde hair, his little spiky hair, just surrounded. At the time, nobody talking to him. I don't want to give any weird impressions, but just surrounded by absolute hotties, most of them assuredly with really thick purses to collect all that cash. It was one of those eye-opening moments. It was pure insanity. So we decide, hey, you know what? Let's go have a bite to eat. Because we're hungry by now. You know, this is multiple hours later. My right armpit's still slickened with sweat. Pretty uncomfortable the entire way around. We walk outside and we had forgotten how AC'd everything was in the Vermintide room versus, let's say, the Lego room and versus, well, the rest of the world. So we go out and it's about, I don't know, it's probably in the high 80s to 90s, which to me is quite uncomfortable. A good 40 degrees too fucking hot. I'd be really happy if Anchorage was cooler than it was. So we walk outside. We're like, let's go find a place to eat. Now, understanding that this is just nerd high capita. There's so many nerds, many of them eating 6-7 fucking burgers at a time. We would go by and we would see people from video game magazines and stuff, just food piled high on these tables. There was nowhere to get in. You know, your line was going to be probably 45, 50 minutes. And then by the time you get there, I had no fucking clue if there was going to be any food left. And I just am really not a fan of sitting down and going to those places if I don't have to. There's nothing in San Francisco that magically makes me think that their food is going to suddenly make me actually care what something tastes like. Like I told you guys before, I'm really more of a maintenance man. Whatever works, works. So we find, no lie, we find basically what you would consider a 7-Eleven, a little side a store. There was also a couple of those side Asian market kind of things. So we decide, okay, we're going to pick up some food. So we pick up, you know, I'm a soda fan. I'll just admit it, you know, got to get my Caffeine Jones, got my Monster. So we're walking through this And this is the weird thing about the San Francisco markets that does not occur where I live. When we were walking into many of these markets, all of their aisles were incredibly thin. So the easiest way to describe it is if a normal aisle between your rack on your right and your rack on your left, let's say, had 5 feet between them in a normal store. And I don't know if 5 feet's normal, 6 feet's normal, what have you. These were like 2.5 feet. It was insanity. We go in and I'm trying to get like some Pop-Tarts or a pop or something like that. And my elbows are, if I even slightly swayed, rubbing against each one of these. And as I'm walking, I'm laughing with Cadiz. I'm going like, this is a fucking fire hazard. Like if there was a fire in this place, it would just be chutes and ladders as we all shot into the fucking fire and got burned up and used for fuel. So we ended up grabbing some different soda. We grabbed a bunch of different snack food. We just grabbed whatever we could. I needed to cut some video and I wanted to do an interview. I wanted to get us all together. Now, one thing I have to describe is we're getting our food, we're paying, and we're walking back. This is at this time, probably a mile and a half back. And you know, I've probably got 3-4 liters of pop plus a bunch of different food. They have the same. So it's going to be a pretty hefty walk back. One of the things about my friends is we're really good in a group, but in particular, VanzaWow is not necessarily incredibly good in a group if he is uncomfortable or unhappy. I can usually ignore stuff for a much greater period of time, but he gets a little churly. He gets a little bit uncomfortable to be around, not in a mean way, just a little snippy. So as we're walking back, I can always tell because I've known these guys for 18 plus years. And if I ask him a question, his answer would get shorter and shorter. That always indicates to me, okay, he's definitely less and less happy as we're moving forward. So Cadiz and I are bantering back and forth. I'm joking about all the people. We're laughing about everything we're seeing. It's just hilarious. We're seeing a lot of different people from different game magazines, all this kind of stuff, which was really interesting. As we're getting back to our hotel, our little, like I said, 100-foot wide hotel that was like 8 stories high. I swear to God, it looked like something out of The Grinch or something like that. One of those bent, evil buildings. It was just insanity. So as we're headed back, I'm talking to VanzaWow. Like I said, he's like, it's getting shorter and shorter. And I know this is not going to work out if I want to do an interview. So what am I going to do? So as we head up, I decide, you know what? We'll get up there. I'll order some room service as well. Something that's a little bit better tasting, maybe. But I don't really know, right? I felt like we were staying in a hotel that was a front for the Russian mob who was like selling illegal Legos. Like I had no clue. This fucking place was just crazy. Even to get into our room was this little maze of dirty rugs and gnarly carpet and stained walls. Like I'm pretty sure I was staying in the Bates Motel, but somehow I just teleported. So we get up there and I order some food, despite my reservations. I'm like, you know what? We're going to order some food. It had the thing in the menu where they always tell you how good their chefs are. I mean, I think it'd be really weird if they were like, hey, our chef, pretty shit, but you won't die. Like that would be a really weird way to sell it. So they were like, you know, 4-star restaurant, 5-star restaurant, whatever they do. And I think we got a burger. We got some ice cream. We got a couple different things. I was like, you know, we'll splurge for the night. And that worked really well. Got VanzaWow a little propped up because he was uncomfortable. And I think a lot of that uncomfortableness is that idea of returning to this room that you know is going to be probably a little warm, a little man sweaty, a little closed off. And, you know, if you try to take a dump in it, you're basically, you could just spit in the toilet and you'd do better than the water does. So we get back, we eat this stuff, set up my computer, and I'm like, hey, let's do an interview. Now you can see you can see this on YouTube. You can actually see this video that we did where we all got together and we talked about our time there. And, you know, we had a blast. That's one of the things that I would say about these guys is we're pretty fast friends. You know, you have those moments as any friendships do, as any relationship does, where you get a little back and forth on each other. Cadiz and I've done it at different events. We did it here a little bit, not even really mean, but like I said, somebody asks you like, how you doing? Good. You know, that's the only answer. And you're like, okay, that's obviously the opposite of good. So we do this interview, this discussion, and it went well. And then we decided to sit down and we played some games. I brought my laptop. Now, at this time, one of the only splurges I ever did, I'm very keen on not spending money. I wanted to get some, you know, some cheaper camcorders, which we got for this event, so that I could take video and that I could record us, which I'm still using today. And I also got this laptop. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to email the guys from Vermintide before I go to bed. And then I'm going to, you know, hang out and maybe play some games. So what I had forgotten And what is a valuable lesson to anybody is that if you have an AC that's like 12 BTU, like we did, there's like a fan over a fucking single ice cube. You don't put a high-end laptop in there and then start playing goddamn GTA. And that's what I did. I ended up playing a bunch of high-end games. I think at that time I was playing Warhammer Space Marine. And crank the graphics up. They're asleep, right? They conked out. I'm somebody who 1.5 hours to 2 hours of sleep is the absolute max I need when I'm at an event or at anything, really. I can get away with an incredible lack of sleep for a long period of time, especially when there's something going on. So I'm sitting there and I'm playing this game and the room's slowly heating up and sort of like that typical thing that you always hear about the frog staying in the boiling water. That is what I did. And I'm playing and all of a sudden it dawns on me. I'm like, both my armpits are sweaty. My back is sweaty. I think my legs are sweaty. Like, what's going on? And I realized I had baked our room. Now, to give you guys an example of how small this room is, if you put two very typical McDonald's one stall restrooms beside each other, it's only a little bit bigger than that. And there were three people and two of these weird miniature single beds. Like, I don't know, maybe we're staying in a dollhouse. I have no fucking clue. It was crazy. So I can't believe this is all true, by the way. They're asleep and I see some lights flashing outside my window. And I hadn't lifted up the windows yet, the blinds, they were closed because we thought, that'll keep the heat out. And I saw this light and I thought it might be good to see a street view. And no shit, this hotel was so fucking cheap that I opened up the window and I saw a diffuser. Now, what diffuser is it's a film you put over a window and that can block out light, but can also diffuse light and it makes a nice soft glow. Nothing wrong with that because I had a window I could fully open. So I reached down, put the blind up, reached down, grab this window and open it. And what in the fuck is occurring? I open it to a roof because what they have done is they have cored out the center of the building for about maybe 10, maybe five stories. And I happen to be on the roof level. So what I actually have a window of is another person's window right across this little tiny asphalt roof. That's why it was so hot. It wasn't just the AC. It was the fact that we were technically above a roof. So if you guys get this idea, basically think of a rectangle and then core the center out down about 5 inches on a 10-inch rectangle. And our room was at the bottom of that facing inward. So I open this thing and I see another room. And I'll admit, yes, there was some sex going on in those other rooms. And maybe we watched a little bit, but hey, you know what? And so this entire place is baking, right? So I shut this thing and I'm laughing to myself. I'm cackling. I'm like, this is the shittiest shit that ever shit a shit. Like, this can't possibly get worse, but it can. So I decide I'm not going to play any games. I'm going to crank down the OC on this laptop and I'm just going to read, which I can do, search the internet, send some emails. And I sit down and no sooner had I sat down that a fucking gunshot goes off. Like less than maybe 50 yards outside the building. And I've lost it. They're asleep. I'm laughing my head off, just going like, what the hell? It's like Beirut. Like, what kind of place am I staying in? And so I laugh. I end up staying till 3 a.m. listening to neighbors fighting, gunshots going off. There's a dude pissing in an alley. Like, it was absolutely crazy. It was hilarious. It's one of those places that you don't necessarily enjoy at the time as much as you probably should. And then you look back at that memory, but I admit I was enjoying it quite a bit just when I was there. I mean, it was uncomfortable, but it was still absolutely hilarious. So we wake up the next day and we're going to go look at a ton of games. A couple of these developers have had on the channel, the developer of The Slaughtering, which is a point and click adventure where you're a guy who might be Jack the Ripper and a couple others. So I knew we had to go see those guys. We decide, all right, let's go ahead and shower. Let's get ready. Now, like I said, this shower is like something from a Winnebago. So it takes us a while, but we all get showered. And Cadiz is one of those people so I take the shower that does the job. I'm in there. It's like a fucking car wash, right? I don't know what's going on with Cadiz, but he's more like a detailer. And I don't even want to know what he's detailing. But when he's in the shower, you're talking like a long period of time, like 10 up. Well, longer than that, more like 15 upwards of like above 20 at times. Like it's crazy talk. And So I warn Vanzoa, I'm like, we need to get in and out as quick as we can. Because first of all, I don't know if he's detailing himself in there. I have no clue. I don't want to go in after him. I'm sure that's not what's happening, by the way, guys. That's just a joke. But I was like, I don't want to wait. So we go in first. He goes in and he's taking a shower. And we decide, okay, let's get some breakfast. And then we'll, you know, we'll go hang out at GDC and we'll go to some tech events too. I'm a big fan of tech events. GDC is easily one of the best events, if not the best for me. It's a little less of the cosplayers and the bullshit and people trying to pride themselves on basically looking like Garrus. And I don't give a fuck about that. I'm more interested in the tech and people who are interested in the tech. So that's why I love GDC. And there were some tech events that we're going to go to. So we go down. I think I ate like 55 Pop-Tarts, which I'll get to in the next couple episodes, was an absolute disaster. Just in I should have known what was going to go on there. But we jump in a taxi and we go back to GDC, and we walk around, we do some stuff, we check out Ubisoft. Very nice. They had a really nice setup there. GDC's interior, at least as somebody who's gone to PAX West, I got to say, I think GDC's interior might be the best one. It's, you know, this all glass. It's very nice, highfalutin, very, very much more based and aimed towards tech than, and aimed towards almost a new modern style than, let's say, PAX Prime, which is up in, I think, at Seattle, Vancouver. And we went to that 2 years later, I think, where it was basically like just smelling man nuts and biscuits. Like that place stank and was humid and wet. It was like living in an armpit or sitting in front of a dog's mouth. But in GDC, it's more of a dry heat there, luckily, at this time, and a nicer spot. So it was this pretty cool place. We're walking around. I see John Romero. Now, again, these are guys that I grew up not idolizing. I've never really idolized anybody, but I've been very interested in their lives. And certainly John Carmack, Romero, those people who got into games, they did in a way, reading about them at least make me interested in games. Because especially with Carmack and Romero, those were two guys that looked normal. I know that sounds crazy to think about, but when you usually look at your heroes, there's a bigger than life element that you usually get. Whether it's Lance Armstrong and his Americana look, or hard rockers and their glitzy look, there's something that usually feels a little off on their looks, a little bigger than the world. But I always felt like Romero looked like somebody's landlord, right? And Carmack looked like somebody who got beat up by the landlord. Like neither one of them, and they're great guys, right? Neither one of them, though, looked out of the ordinary. And they were easier, I think, in some way, to sort of come to grips with as people and understand you can make it. And so while I didn't idolize them, I looked towards them as people that were normal people who like games and were into them, and somebody that, you know, I would definitely want to talk to in the future. I think this is also a good place to discuss how interviews go, especially when it comes to discussions. One of the reasons why I've been lucky to get different companies to come on in interviews, and honestly, as far as I can tell, this is the one kudo I'll accept, the one little back path that I absolutely will accept, which is I don't think I've ever seen almost any other channel have multiple composers or multiple developers on like I have. Vermintide, The Surge, Mad Max, we had developers from all three of those games come together and talk about things at the same time. And I think this is a good place to mention it, because a lot of it did start a little prior to GDC, but it certainly continued at GDC, which is knowing a little bit about the tech you're talking about. You know, a lot of times we'll see reviews, and we all make mistakes. I want to make sure that that's clear. I'm not saying that somebody won't make a mistake, but a lot of times you'll see reviews where a person, they won't really explain the context in which they have an issue with a game, right? They'll sort of pretend they know, but they don't. And you can sort of pick apart, like, when they start talking about tech, it's like, dude, you have no clue what you're talking about. Like, you don't understand the game tech or the engine tech or something like that. So the desire or what you want isn't there, not because of lackadaisical effort on the developer, but it's actually because whatever you're asking for, especially back in the day when all this was occurring 3 years ago, 4 years ago, the tech wasn't there in all these engines for this. And this is something we see in reviews. You see somebody say, oh, this isn't possible. You'd be like, well, yeah, it's because of this. Or, you know, this person doesn't really understand game tech. I had always taken my time to learn and read as much as humanly possible. And the GDC events really allowed me to continue that. Going to these GDC events, and there were many of them, but to go and sit down and hear about the tech behind the different games, about everything from procedural generation to the new engines coming at that time. They're out now. They've been out for probably 2 or 3 years now. But at that time, we're brand new and we're headed on their way. It really allows for you to have this ground floor of technical knowledge that while you won't know it as in depth, and you'll certainly make mistakes, it's easier to come to a defining line with other developers, or with developers, sorry, and be able to discuss things with them. And I was able to do that with a couple people, the developers from Ashen, great guys who made Ashen this year, and then the Vermintide guys, Surge, Mad Max, all the composers. It's because you really should do your due diligence. Otherwise, at some point, you really are just an entertainment reviewer. You're just sort of blathering. And that can be fun, and it can be interesting, and you can tell people what you think from a layman's standpoint, but you really can't dive any deeper because you just don't actually know what's occurring. And that's one of the things I always wanted to do, is I wanted to sort of do both. I wanted to talk in depth about things, but I also wanted to know what the fuck I was saying so a developer didn't have to basically just turn my video off. And especially talking to developers now, talking to publishers now, talking to people who are in PR who used to be publishers, developers, or people who are publishers and developers who moved into PR, like all these different people. One of the things they will tell you is it only takes a couple times in a single video for somebody to make a mistake or say something that doesn't make sense, where a lot of people will just turn off their video who are in the know, who are techs. And I never really wanted that. I was always a little interested in seeing if I could capture their attention as well. Not only a gamer's attention, let's say in a review, but a developer's attention in a review, so that they can go, oh, you know what? He saw that. Yes, that's exactly what we had to do. Or that's not what we had to do. Here's what we did on the back end that you didn't see. Or that's a weakness here. Or it's something else. And I really enjoyed that. And with this GDC, there were some events. I don't remember the exact ones. There was a paper mache looking game, and I remember Tearaway, I think. I'm pretty sure that's the one it was. And there was the tech behind that. And the tech behind a couple others, and being able to sit, you know, it wasn't the high fancy stuff that you'd see at E3 where it's like everybody's playing a game every 2 seconds. This was more along the lines of sort of sitting back and just learning about the tech and seeing the people behind the scenes. These are people who maybe a lot of times they might be a lead technician or a program engine programmer, an engine creator even for a game. So they usually won't be the one going out and talking. In fact, a lot of times I don't like to really talk to the person who's going out and talking, because many times they're not the producer, and the producer is really the big wig on scene for most games, at least how most games are developed. The producer is the person who oversees everything, but they're very busy. And the idea of like me, even now with my subscriber base, to be like, hey man, you need to stop making your game so you can come talk to me, seems pretty stupid. Like, that's pretty idiotic to even think that that would happen. However, you've got some other people who maybe they've done their preliminary work who have a little bit of time to talk to you. And I would really suggest, if you're thinking of starting a channel, or if you're doing a channel and you're not getting the hits that you want from people within a company, but you do want to interview somebody or something like that, you know, don't always aim for the top. I mean, you can't always aim for a Pete Hines or, you know, somebody like that. Sometimes you have to aim for somebody that is a little bit more gettable, and they will many times reward that with a ton of information. And that's what GDC was about, was meeting up with people, handshakes, you know, deciding what we were going to do, and really identifying as I went forward how the channel was going. And the channel at that time, I was like, okay, this is working out for us. So we decide, you know, we've gone to these events. This is Saturday, right? Yeah, it's Saturday. Now, we were going to stay till Monday. We go through Saturday, and I certainly have done much harder things than a GDC. I've logged. I've pulled green chain. Pulling green chain, if you don't know what that is, you can look it up. It's considered one of the harder jobs in like America. It's ridiculously hard. So I know what hard work is, but I got to tell you, as somebody who doesn't really like people that much, unless I sort of want to, it's tiring to be around people that much and talking and walking. And, you know, maybe you don't want to see this one game, but you're going to go see it, which greatly enough for me is that a lot of the games I was sort of iffy on, I went and saw anyway and was like, oh man, I'm digging this. But it comes up Sunday. We wake up and we're exhausted, right? I mean, we're legit exhausted. We drove down here. I stayed up both nights, probably slept 45 minutes Saturday night, slept about an hour and a half on Friday night. And, we're tuckered, man. So what we do is we change our schedule around. We're like, all right, let's just hit a couple of these. And then I look at the timing and I'm like, I can hit a couple of these pre-noonish. VansaWow was going to fly out earlier anyway. So I was like, you know what? If VansaWow is going to leave, let's see if we can check out early and let's just drive home. So I asked Cadiz, I'm like, you okay with that? And Cadiz is more than okay with it. He's like, yeah, man. He's like, I've seen most of what I want to see. Saturday was busy. I'm telling you guys, it was multiple tech events and just tons of games. We're talking like 30, 40 games, sitting down, talking to a bunch of people. I think there we saw Mortal Kombat X at the time, if I remember right. Yeah, would have been Mortal Kombat X, which matter of fact, we got to meet a couple of their behind the scenes folks. Great people. I believe that's also where we got to see Syndicate. I'll have to go back and look. If it's not there, I'll tell a story that could be either PAX or GDC, but I don't want to bring up YouTube and verify this, but this is one of the best stories I've got for gaming. And it's one of the fast friends that I do consider him a friend. And that's one of the Ubisoft PR folks who had really helped me out. He had helped me out for a great many times behind the scenes.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And so we decide we want to see the Division 1, I believe. Yeah. And we go up there. And this, no lie, this happens in a small period of time. We go up there. There's all these Xboxes in a pyramid shape, sort of in the Division triangle. And he's like, okay, when you're playing, make sure to not do this, this, and this, because that'll crash the systems. We're like, no problem. We're playing. Less than 15 seconds into the game, I do exactly what he says don't do. I crash all the Xboxes, right? So we're like, shit. So I'm all, hey, man, yeah, remember that thing you said? And he's like, okay. So they reset all the Xboxes. We play some more. We decide to go away. He's like, hey, do you want to see Syndicate? Now, at the time, I didn't know what Syndicate would be, but I was really interested in Assassin's Creed. And we go play it, and we sit down with one of their leads. And we've got this PR person. I don't really want to mention their name. You guys can tell who I'm talking about if you follow me on Twitter. I just don't. I'm trying not to mention people I really know in here because they may not want their name mentioned. I don't know why, but I'm just saying that. So we're talking and he's like, hey, sit down with this lead and play Syndicate. So Cadiz and I are playing Syndicate. And I can tell you right now, guys, usually you can look at a game and go, okay, if this continues on the trajectory, it's going to be fun. And I was feeling that with Syndicate, legit feeling that. Like, this is a blast. We get on a stagecoach, right? And there's certain things that this PR person is like, please don't do this because it'll crash the game, or don't do this because we're hiding that data until 6 months from now when we get closer because it's a boss or something, right? Very typical stuff, and certainly within their purview. There's nothing wrong with that. So we capture all this footage, right? A bunch of footage. We're having a great time. We get done. The developer and I mean, I still follow the developer. We had a great time. He was awesome. He explained a bunch of stuff, showed us a bunch of stuff. So the PR guy's like, okay, man, well, I want to thank you. Here's my Twitter, blah, blah, blah. And again, I talk to him, you know, probably once every week or so on Twitter, like just a great chap. And we walk off, right? So Cadiz and I are walking around this GDC floor. Again, I'm just going back in time a little bit. This is on Saturday. And as we're walking around, we start getting cell phone alerts. And it's like, meet me, meet me, meet me. And we're all, did our phones get hacked? Who the fuck, who's like yelling meet me in these emails and in these text messages? And I didn't recognize the name because I had gone on like their Twitter name and not their real name, which was like truncated. And they're all, meet me, I need to meet you, blah, blah, blah. I don't answer. And Cadiz comes up to me. He's like, dude, I started getting messages because I ignore my phone. I'll be honest. My cell phone is for basically two things. Hopefully self-defense if somebody tries to stab my fucking side pocket when I'm wearing it, when I have it in my jeans. And second, you know, if something horrendously horrible happens and I have a moment to record my last little bits of life for an audio log in a video game. Like, I just don't use my cell phone, don't care to use them, don't really care to talk to people. So I've been ignoring mine. But Cadiz runs up to me. He's like, dude, I don't know who this is. they're on me. They're like, they want to meet us. Do you have people from your various forums or whatever you want to meet? And I'm reading this thing going, I have no fucking clue. And then the next message comes up and it's like, you have footage you're not allowed to have. Well, at this time I realized, well, he's the only one who's mentioned footage. So I'm like, oh, I bet you it's the Ubisoft guy. So we decide, we're like, okay, he wants to meet us. And I mean, I'm not talking one or two messages, guys. I'm talking like maybe 40 to 60. Like, we're talking like pinging up the phone, blowing it up. So we go back and he's like, hey, I just want you to know the developer liked you so much. He forgot what he wasn't supposed to show you until after like an hour. And then he came to me and was like, I took Carrick through everything, like on stuff you weren't supposed to do on play. He's like, you can't have that footage. So we end up going all the way back. He's like, give me the USB. I'll go and I'll get you proper footage. I'll get you high bit rate proper footage, by the way. And it can replace what you've got, which is still good, but this will be super high bit rate. We'll give you a USB, but I got to delete what you guys have got. So we give it to him. He deletes it. He comes back. And it's so funny because we just had so many moments of oddities with this guy, the breaking of the Division, this as well, and seeing some other games that they showed us. It was just one of those moments where you realize, oh, I'm going to remember this guy forever. And I do. I still talk to him. It was hilarious, though, just him chasing us down those hallways trying to find us to get that footage back was such a great time. So back to Sunday, we decide, yeah, we're going to go home. So we go to a couple events. We get back and I call up the hotel and I'm like, listen, I want to check out early. I'm fucking hot. I'm uncomfortable. I want out of here. And they're like, okay, no problem. And we'll let you, there's enough people who are flying in late who may want to use your room. You know, we're not going to charge you. So I'm like, good, because I wouldn't have probably accepted that anyway. So we go downstairs, we check out, and this guy comes peeling down in my car. I'm still pretty sure somehow he was breaking reality. I don't know how he got that car back down that fucking, you guys don't even understand how big my car is and how small this corkscrew parking lot was. But he comes down. We decide, okay, let's get out of here. Now, Vanzel is going to stay in the hotel room for like another 2 hours. Then he's flying out as well. So everything's pretty much working out. We've got everything planned. It seems like it's all going to go well. And Cadiz and I decide we're going to go home. Now, like I said, this is an 8. I can't remember if it's 8, 12 or something like that hours. I never looked it up prior to these podcasts. But we decide we're going to go pretty fast on the way home. And I don't want to admit anything on the podcast. But I'll just say that pretty sure some land speed records were broken because we buried that speedometer a couple dozen times and there were still people passing us in like Ferraris, Lamborghinis and stuff. But we made it home so fast. The joke is every time we get together and tell the story, I always remove an hour from how long it took us to get home. So it like started out at 10, then it was like 9. By the fifth time I've told it, it's like we got home in 4 hours. Pretty soon now it'll be like we drove out and we're already back here. But We just drove home and we did that thing where, you know, when you're tired, right, you just zone out and crank the music, drove all the way home. And I think that was one of those moments when I got done and I just really felt like things were coming together. They weren't always coming together, which I'll describe. But at that point, I felt like this is sort of what I want to do. I'm liking the people. I'm having good experiences. I had some of the greatest experiences of that GDC, the Vermintide guys, the Ubisoft people. The funny, strange hookers in the Hilton Hotel lobby. So it all felt like it was sort of working out together. So we get home, and again, this is multiple hours of a drive later. It's pretty much all nonstop. I think we stopped and got gas once. We blasted it and surprised everybody who was here when I pull up. They're just like, holy shit, man, you like called us like just a couple hours ago when you were leaving San Francisco. We get home, we unpack everything, and, you know, packing for an event versus unpacking for an event, I don't know about you guys, but usually I just, like, toss everything. And we get out, I start grabbing all my shit, and I don't realize that some of the stuff that's my recorded media is in my clothes bag. Now, this is on purpose because the clothes bag is clothes. And so some of the items I had were a little breakable, so you put them in there, and that'll soften the blow if they get, you know, jostled around in a car trunk. But I was so tired, ended up tossing in, lost about, I don't know, 8 hours of footage from various games, couple interviews and stuff like that. But you know, that's life. That's the thing that happens. And I think the moral of my story is I got a lot out of it. I got a lot out of GDC. We had a lot of problems. We had technical issues with trying to do the podcast. We had a horrendous hotel room, just right out of a fucking Hitchcock movie. We had all kinds of crazy, funny events, but it was one of those times where you do something with friends and you're like, yeah, we'll remember this forever, like a good trip you take or something like that. So I get home and I only have like a couple days rest before Ori or Ori, depending on where you're from, and the Blind Forest comes in for review. Now this is 2015, it's in March at some point, and I gotta say, this is really, I think, what happens with anything in life. You have those lucky moments, those unlucky moments, and this was a lucky moment for me because not only did I have an amazing game, but I had some shitty games, and what it did was it allowed for me in the next couple weeks to really lock down the way I wanted to go about the process for reviewing. So the first one was Blind Forest. Now, if anybody knows me, they know that's one of my favorite games of all time. The game is fucking phenomenal. The game is a 2D masterpiece in graphics and all that. Now, admittedly, I don't get emotional about stuff. I've admitted that before. Scared, jump scares don't work on me. Emotional stuff in games don't work on me. I don't know why, but I don't get that invested in that kind of stuff. Even if I love a story, if somebody dies, I'll be like, oh, well, sucks for them. And if somebody lives, I'm like, oh, okay, I guess they lived. Like, I just don't buy into it. Ori and the Blind Forest really tried to get you to buy in. And I did a little bit, not as much as I would say everybody else who were like, I weeped real soul tears when I was playing the game. And I'm like, all right, whatever. Not me. But I did like the game. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it had some of the best control. It was at times nut-crunchingly hard. We all know the fucking level I'm talking about. But graphically, it was primo. It was exactly what I wanted. And it was all of these things that combined, good gameplay, good sound, amazing music, good story, and good graphics, that really allowed for me to make what I think is one of my better reviews. And I don't mean better even really when it comes to presentation being perfect or anything like that, but I mean sort of solidified the way I was going to do them moving forward and made me understand exactly how I wanted to deliver them. And it helped me out having that game. If it had been a mediocre game, I'm sure I would have still hit whatever stride I hit, but it was this amazing game that allowed for that passion to come through, for me to sort of dive into a title, really want to talk about it, and be able to really pinpoint different elements that I liked. And that game, Blind Forest, if you haven't played it, you're doing yourself a disservice if at all you can handle 2D games, because that game is just amazing. However, what is not amazing, what is solid piss on a digital disc, is Battlefield Hardline. That game is bad. And luckily, I had to review it like 10 days later. So I come off of the high of highs. I come off of the Blind Forest review. I come off of a game that many people have considered a masterpiece, a perfect painting. If you compare the Blind Forest with Battlefield Hardline, it is like an amazing painting next to a child who suffered a severe concussion painting with their face, just smearing fucking crayon all over their face and headbutting a white piece of paper 10 times. That's how bad that fucking game was. The game was piss poor, should have never had the Battlefield name on it. It was bad in so many ways. That game made Kelly who is ginormously hot. Kelly who is like a next stage of hotness when it comes to like a lady. It made her look like some kind of freakish plastic doll. It was crazy how poor everything in that game was handled. And it was lucky for me. I came off of the high highs and I went pretty much boom to the low of lows. And what that did for me was allowed for me to understand where those two sort of the ceiling and the floor were. It made me understand how to deliver data on a game I absolutely loved and I liked everything about, in a game like Battlefield Hardline, which shouldn't have been called a game at fucking all. It should have just been called some kind of digital trap. So it was cool. It really did help. Now, after that, I ended up doing some more Let's Plays. We did Dying Light. I believe that was Cadiz and I could be wrong. We did Pillars of Eternity, Homeworld Remastered, and a couple of these side titles, like I think it was called Nightbane, which is a card game. And just some different ones. But this is also when I got to start covering a couple titles. That's where I'm going to end this, is discussing these titles and then wrap this up. Titles that I really like, which are MMOs that are free to play. Now, a lot of people are surprised when I say what some of my favorite games are, because they look at me and they're like, this dude looks like a logger who probably humps pine when he's out in the woods. How the fuck could he like Sims? And I do. I love Sims, but I also love my free MMOs. I don't know why. I always have. I always feel like it's so great to be able to play an MMO for like 50, 60, 70 hours and not pay a cent. If I want to pay, I can. But I feel by that point, if I've got that many hours, I'm just throwing the dev a bone. They deserve a couple bucks. So I got to review Neverwinter. Now, Neverwinter has its technical issues, for sure. But Neverwinter is still going, and it's still going strong. So is DC Universe. So is Star Trek Online. And this is one of the first times I got to check out a game. This was on the Xbox One. It was the first really free MMO on the Xbox One. Remembering that DCU was or DC Universe Online was originally a Sony game made by a Sony studio, and then they broke off to make Daybreak. So, which, by the way, we got to have their president, Matt Broom, who is also a Batman illustrator, come on the podcast later on, and I'll talk about that as well. But I got to do Neverwinter Nights, or Neverwinter, and it was so cool to see this dichotomy. This was one of the first times where I really got to talk about this kind of thing. But this is where I feel the digital helps versus hinders. We have these titles that the longest period of time, there was no Steam. Everything was its own launcher because it was a fucking, it was a shortcut, right? You didn't have a launcher. You had to search for shortcuts. Then we get into games that, you know, sell some customizables online and that kind of thing, but nothing really delivered, especially to the consoles in any unique way. And then we get into titles where like you got your Oblivion and your Horse Armor and those kind of things. But we didn't really have any big MMOs that I got a chance to cover until this time. And covering Neverwinter and later on those other free MMOs was really eye-opening because it was great. It was great to come to the understanding that a person can buy a console. Right now, I don't know what they are. I think they're $150 for an Xbox Original. Game Pass is $1 or something. So, but you get a console, and then for free, you just download Neverwinter. And I am a big value person. I'm a person who, when I talk to friends and they're all, well, I could get a PC, but I don't really have $1,000 or something. I don't really have $1,500 or whatever, you know, they're aiming for. And it's like, well, dude, if you've got $150 and $1 a month, do Game Pass and an Xbox. Or, you know, if you like exclusives, even though, you know, they're not delivered at a super high rate, you can go with a PlayStation. If you like portability, you can go with a Switch. I am a big believer in value, and free MMOs, especially on the consoles, there's this additional benefit or this cool moment when you're playing a game and you're like, dude, I just spent, you know, 10, 15 hours in this game and it was free, and Warframe for the PC and PS4 and Xbox as well. Those kind of games are completely awesome. And it was such a great time to be able to cover that game and discuss it with people and go like, this is what value to me is. Value isn't just the hardware. Am I getting the most money value for my hardware? That's sort of the easy way to describe things. That's something that, you know, any four-year-old could do. It, to me, it's the value that's intrinsic over a period of time. And it's not the devaluation of a car that I'm talking about, which is sort of along the same things, but it's more along the lines of what surprises you get from whatever value, which is very cool to me. There's something, there's some extra usability. And I think this was the first console generation where I felt that way, where I felt like I bought something and it became extra usable. Admittedly, the Xbox got its blades and its different interfaces, and there were some cool things. But there's something in particular, and they had World of Tanks, actually, on the 360. I just didn't get to experience it. Again, I'm just giving my impressions of my experience. But when I was playing that Xbox and I was starting to play these free games, I was like, this is great. And this is so great for people who don't have a ton of money. And, you know, that gets back to why I do these reviews the way I do them. Buy, wait for sale, rent, never touch. It speaks to me. It speaks to me in a way that will never stop speaking to me. It's money. I spend my money to buy a game, even if a developer gives me a code. You spend it because that's all you've got. Is there anything more intrinsically easy really to translate than cash? Even if you have a different exchange rate, you can still understand where somebody's coming from. And it makes far more sense than a 1 to 10 scale for me, or a 1 to 5. 1 to 5 means fucking absolutely nothing. If you get 3 people in a room and I tell you a game's an 8 and another game's an 8.5, how many motherfucking people in there are going to understand the difference between 0.5? They're not going to have any fucking clue. But if you say this game is a wait for a deep, deep sale, pretty goddamn much everybody in there who understands whatever language it's being translated into is going to understand what that means. And I think that that's what's vital and what's important and why it works so well for me. So that's it for me. I want to say thanks. If you guys get a chance, check out Patreon. YouTube's a bitch. I told you guys, I'm just going to push it. In the past, I wouldn't, but I'm all... We're at this point where I got to tell you, come to fucking Patreon, because if people don't, and we are getting people doing it, so I'm not saying that people aren't, but I'm saying if that doesn't continue, then, you know, I just have a feeling, regardless of anything else, YouTube's going away in a very short period of time. At minimum, it's going away for me. That's how I certainly feel. I feel within a year, I'll be demonetized completely. I can't even stream without getting demonetized before I even have the stream go live. I feel that that's where it's aimed, and Patreon helps. Also, watching here helps, but I got to tell you guys, absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, man, go online, go to iTunes, go to Spotify, go to Anchor, wherever you listen to my annoying, naggy, bitch-ass voice, and review it. Please. Reviews help so much. They help the charting go up. They help a shit ton. And, you know, if you review it high, that's even better if you liked it. The reason why is because of the way iTunes, the way, Spotify and all these guys handle these is that it's not only views, because views not necessarily can be botted, but they're not as important by themselves without reviews. And just by getting a couple reviews from a couple people, we've actually shot up the charts. We're number one for the podcast, for my channel, I guess I'll just say, for the Anchor channel on iTunes, number one on iTunes for leisure in Australia. So I got to say, for you five Aussies out there who are riding kangaroos, fighting the good fight, fighting off scorpions, just running away from giant man-eating spiders, most likely using an internet that's like 2 kilobyte. I want to say thank you absolutely for whatever you did listening to this. It's awesome. I saw that we shot hugely up the charts there. I was joking around with somebody in the Discord who I know is from Australia. I'm like, he probably wrote a bot, but he didn't. But it was nice to see that. We've shot up in a lot of charts, and that is mainly because of people listening and reviewing. I gotta tell you, it's a huge deal. Anyway, that's it for me. The next one I will cover sort of the interspersed time for me understanding the value, like I said, of consoles, free-to-play, the value of different titles, how to review them. But we're also going to jump into the idiosyncrasies of YouTube, the idiosyncrasies of differences on YouTube, and a little bit about Total Biscuit. I got to meet Total Biscuit. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about meeting somebody that a lot of people would love to meet and what my interactions with him were like. And even back then, what it was like to start seeing demonetization hit YouTube and how my plans, which are always to have 3 or 4 backup plans, sort of worked out for me in the long run and why it's important for you. Anyway, that's it for me. I'll shut up. Peace out and enjoy the rest of your week.